This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Choose the most unusual matches. Choose the best of the WWF. Choose wrestling's biggest, smallest, and strongest. Choose Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Roddy Piper's greatest hits, and wrestling's bloopers, bleeps, and body slams. Choose George the Animal Steel. Choose the Ken Patera story. Choose the life and times of Captain Lou Albano. Choose the Hulkamania series. Choose the Ultimate Warrior. And choose Macho Man Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Choose WWF World Tour, Smack and Wacko, and UK Rampages 91, 92 and 93. Choose a journey back in time. Choose Seen Your Video. It's time for everyone to dust off the VCR and plug it back into the television set as we take a trip into the Colosseum Home Video Vault with your host, Rory McNamara.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode 2 of Seen Your Video, the show where I, Rory McNamara, walk into your attic, making his own way to the box, dipping his hand in and seeing what he can find. But there's no way I could trawl about that up in the dark on my own, so I think it was only right and proper that with one special relation joining me for episode 1, I had the Ideas Man from Special Relations here for episode 2, and that is my friend Mr. Ben Locke. Ben, how are you, sir?
Hello, Rory. Good afternoon, everybody, or good evening, whenever you're listening to this. All good, mate. How are you?
I'm very well, and it is great to have you on board. So, Ben, first things first, I shall ask you the question I asked Callum during episode 1, and that is Colosseum Video, or Silver Vision, as they were distributed under in our neck of the woods. Were you a bit of a collector? Did you have pay-per-views and they're stuffed away upstairs, along with the other VHSs?
I don't think I was a particularly big video guy. I think I've told the story on the first episode of Special Relations. My mum and her best friend, she had a son, and our thing was getting videos from the video rental store, if you can remember them, kids. So my first pay-per-view was WrestleMania 6, and yeah, we sort of rented everything we could. It was like our thing, some kids go outside to play outside, we watched wrestling videos, that was our thing.
What were some of the ones you can remember renting on a regular basis?
WrestleMania 6 got very heavy rental, I remember that. A couple of the WrestleFest as well, when they came out, we were really big into them. World Tour Night 1 as well got a heavy rotation. And let's segue into what we're going to be doing today. This got very heavy rotation as well onto our playlist.
I was going to ask you this question. So you have watched this particular VHS before then, my friend?
Yes.
Why don't you tell the fan base, such as it should exist, what we are going to be looking at in episode 2 of Seeing Your Video today, my friend?
We are going back to 1993. We are going to be watching Smack 'em Whack 'em.
And I should say, everybody, I gave Ben complete freedom to choose from the remaining 69 home video classics. Callum was not afforded such a luxury, but as I said last one, I will have him back on to pick one, providing there's anything good left when he next appears.
I think when we spoke, I said to him, I think you hit an own goal, but he said, Rory made me.
My show, my rules for episode 1, eh?
No. There you go.
As early as episode 2, I'm throwing it open for you. So, why did you choose this one, my friend?
Why did I choose this one? So, there are two history-making matches, I would say, on this video. I mean, you might disagree with that statement, but I would say there's two history-making matches on this video. It's a literal video with something for everyone. There's also probably one of the greatest segments I've ever seen on this video. As well as Undertaker Razor Ramon, which is quite a rarity for 1992, 93.
Yeah, when I was working my way through this one, other than the skits, which we'll of course get to in minute detail,
Some of the matchups here, I'm sure you know the obvious two that Ben was talking about, dear listener, but think like Undertaker, Razor, and something like that. And that's the sort of thing I'm really looking forward to getting into during this project, because I'm, say, I've actually before, early 90s Coliseum video is an area I'm rather sketchy on. It's not something I really watched at the time, didn't even become a fan until 96. So matchups like that that would otherwise be lost to history and we didn't get on TV or pay-per-view, I'm particularly looking forward to seeing. And when we get there at the end of this tape, Razor Undertaker certainly falls into that category.
Yeah. Well, like I say, it really is a video. It really is something for everyone, video this.
You know, I could see this one being very popular at the time. Despite, you talk about the name Smack 'em Whack 'em just for a second. It's very Vince McMahon 1993. Is it fair to say that?
I would say that. It's also got certain connotations, but this is a family show, so I will not... I will not go there too much.
You know what? I didn't actually consider that myself. And they say I am the master of the double entendre here on PTV. That thought only just once crossed my mind. That's giving me competition on that score, Mr. Locke.
Sorry.
So, shall we hit the play button right now and see what we've got?
Let's go for it.
As I say, this one is very easy to find, in as much as things are on the WWE Network, if you locate the home video classic section. 1 hour and 59 minutes on the network. I believe this one, Ben, you know much better than I do, is unedited from the VHS, as far as you know.
As far as I know, yes. It was very much sort of 12, 13-year-old Ben watching this. So it's been, it was probably about 20 years later when I watched it again. So, I can't remember for sure if what's been edited and what's not. But it's about 2 hours long, which is about right.
I do think right at the very end when Al is wrapping up, and yes, we'll get to that too, the music that's playing on the network is rather loud, leading me to think it's replacing the original Coliseum video music, perhaps.
Right, yeah.
Other than that, I'm pretty certain that there are no edits or cuts, certainly none that I could, but you know, I have a keen eye for this sort of thing, none that crossed my eye, so I think this is as it was on the VHS. Very glad this sort of stuff is on the network because it gives me another 68 episodes for it to give to you over the next probably 68 years. But anyway, we shall find out. So, shall we smack and whack 'em, so to speak, Mr. Locke?
Let's go for it.
Let's go for it. So then, the aforementioned Lord Alfred Hayes introduces us to proceedings from, and I quote, dilapidated circumstances. He's surrounded by toolkits and helmets and the like, just in case we want some help doing up the house. The 12-year-old Ben Locke, that was probably low on your list of priorities at the time, I would say.
Yeah, my dad used to run a building site, but at this point he'd changed career. So I was kind of used to this kind of thing. It sort of brought me back to sort of 8, 9-year-old Ben. I was like, no, I don't want any more of this.
I hope that the building work we see during the course of this video doesn't actually bring back that many memories of what your dad did.
No. The health, even in 1989, the health and safety police would have not have approved of this.
Well, safety is the key word during these skits, as I'm sure you know. So then the bushwhackers, yes, the bushwhackers, they march in with undeserved enthusiasm. They have been hired by the finest construction firm in America. This will become the Bushwhackers' whacking room, a visual I did not want, it is very safe to say. And then the Bushwhackers do indeed go on about safety, leading me to think that family members of theirs should have thought about that a good 50 years beforehand. They gingerly put a helmet on Alfred, followed by some goggles. Sadly, we are not done at this point, as he needs a tool belt. He doesn't want to get his hands dirty and just wants to do the commentary. I'm not sure what is worse. And as the Whackers grab a hammer, he hands over to our first match. Ben, you know the rules on this show. We break things down segment by segment, and not even I can avoid this opening one as much as I would like to. The Bushwhackers are doing up your house. Yeah, does the word cowboy mean anything to you?
Yeah, you wouldn't exactly be full of hope, would you, if they knocked on your door?
It does make you wonder. This is supposedly the finest construction firm in America. They remain unnamed throughout the course of this tape.
But I've got to say, actually, I didn't mind Alfred and Bushwhackers in this. I know they've got a bit of a reputation, but it was like two colliding levels of suck, you know, into each other. And it kind of worked. I can't describe why, but I know it was just my good feeling for the whole tape. But they did kind of work together.
So you're saying all that suck sucked out the suck?
Now he's doing the entendres.
10 minutes in. It's expected of me, you know. So, more on them later, or whatever. Let's get to our first match, shall we, with one of Hayes' favourite wrestlers, the Berserker, against another ever-present in the show so far, and that is Kona Crush. What a nice young man he is, maybe too nice. We'll just wait until the end of the year. So then, Crush versus Berserker, emanating from Philadelphia, and what a great place to have a match like that, eh? The commentators talk about Norwegian descent for a while, but Hayes has never heard of what Huss means. I should say our commentary, Mar Hayes and Gorilla for this one. Crush sends Berserker over the ropes early, but after a breather, Berserker is able to club away in the corner. We are in the Keystone State. Alfred asks why it is called that, and a very bored Gorilla says, I have no idea. They talked about things that should have been cut. Maybe that exchange probably didn't need that one. Do you really want to piss off your fans in that neck of the woods? I'm not sure you do. Russian leg sweep by Berserker as we hear about George Washington driving us barmy. B is back to Berserker is back to clubbering, and a big boot diving attack come headbutt sends Crush to the outside. Now, after a lengthy delay, Berserker gets up a pile driver and a nice one too. Nonchalant cover Jess is only good for a two count. Berserker goes for a knee drop but misses. He is though able to tie Crush in the ropes. Plenty of kicks to the face, but they have less and less effect. Crush in with an inverted atomic drop and clothesline, and both cheers are clearly piped in. Well, this is Philadelphia. Leg drop for two, then Berserker misses what was probably meant to be a drop kick by many a mile. He does the splits off a kick to the back of the leg, and then the Skull Crusher, as it is called here, gets the submission win. It should be said Berserker was in it for quite a while. Ben, your first match to review on these shows, and you couldn't have picked a better one.
I couldn't actually. This was very Coliseum video. This was, you know, two guys put in, let's say minimal effort. We'll put it that way. The thing I found most interesting, and you didn't mention it, was the announcers talking about Crush, the whole nice guy thing. And I think it was Gorilla was like saying, you know, he should get a bit of an attitude going. And it was like, yeah, just wait. Just you wait, it's coming. I'm glad you mentioned the splits. I did put the splits down in my notes. But yeah, it was not a great match. Was not great. You'd have been a bit peed off if you'd been in that crowd. But that was very early 90s. You know, you had to sort of wait however many hours to get a named match like that.
Yeah, it's one of those where it is thrown together, but it has to be. I'm not sure what taping this one took place at.
Well, I think I saw the Primetime Wrestling banners hanging up. I might be totally wrong with that.
We do see a lot of those throughout this show, so stuck at the end of those would make sense. I'm sure Richard Land, if he's listening, would be able to tell us very, very quickly indeed. I talked about this with Callum on episode one, that Crush, certainly during that show, UK Rampage 93, was exceedingly over indeed. I know this match predates that one by a few months, but I don't think the crowd were feeling it here. And I repeat, crowd chants audibly piped in. It was just that sort of that you got on Mega Drive sports games at the time, or Genesis, if you're listening to this in the States, which I'm sure most of you are. I could pick that out a mile off, I'm afraid to say. One of those matches where it is just the humour that you really need to pick out, and trying to analyse it from any real status of canonical merit is a fool's errand. The fact we both mentioned in our notes that somebody did the splits in our opening match should tell you all you need to know about this one. But they were trying to get the Skull Crusher over as a finisher. I will give them that.
I mean, it was a great finish. He could have been a great babe. Let's face it, he probably should have been where Luger was, but they chose Luger. He just got that reputation as a choke artist, didn't he? You know, whatever. Choked against Michaels, choked against Yokozuna, even choked against Savage. He should have been a lot more than he ended up being with that build and that moveset.
I certainly prefer the Skull Crusher as a finisher to the Heart Punch. I can tell you that for nothing.
Yes.
Punch, one of the fucking worst finishes in the game. I hate that fucking move. But we need not concern ourselves with that here. But this was an opening match. It existed. Back to the house. The Whackers want to put a window in so they can see out of it, which for them is pretty sound logic. I think the idea of an enclosed space, though, is probably best for them. And indeed, when do they put up the rubber wallpaper? Instead, they measure for the window and they mark an X. But for some reason, they go a little low and they bash in the corner with lots of wow, wow, wows for bad. I mean, for good measure. Ben, anything to add to this?
My notes have put... let's have a look. My other notes. Don't think I trust the Bushwhackers with a building project. I can't believe it took me two segments to realise that.
You gave them the benefit of the doubt first when they turned up, didn't you?
Yeah. You know, it's like they've got to find their way around the house. Now they've settled in, but no, they would not last very long.
You'd be tearing up the contract in front of their faces, I'd like to think, at this point.
I would think so. I think Alfred's been far too polite with them. He's far too nice to them.
He's just giving the bumbling Englishman thing. He's too good at it, Alfred. He's too good at it. They would have been hitting the bricks metaphorically long, long ago if I'd been in charge
Absolutely.
Of this one. Absolutely. Let's get to another match, which is from Dayton, Ohio, between the Repo Man and Earthquake. Sharp and take a breath, reminding myself this whole product is my own idea. Alfred tries to explain what Repo does, but then we see in the ring he does very little. One Quake, or Quaker, as I've called him here, now that would be a gimmick, brushes off a shoulder tackle very easily. Avalanche in the corner, then Repo is able to readjust his mask. A shot to the breadbasket and then a second rope clothesline does get the big man down, but only for a delayed two count. Neck vice, which Quake can power out of, and then he does that stomp on the chest thing. He gets put down again as Alfred calls him agile. And now we get a blatant chokehold ref. Gorilla does that much, much better than me, or indeed anybody. He goes to the top rope this time, but Quake catches him off, well, sort of, and then that patented power slam. Now it's time to feel the tremors, and there's your 9 on the Richter scale, followed by a 3 count. Sue me, but I like the Repo Man character. Darsal just went for it. I think he realised why the fuck not, and he just did. But from in-ring perspective, what do we think?
I'm kind of with you with Darsal. You've got to admire his commitment to the character, haven't you? You know, if you're going to do it, you've got to go all in, which he certainly did. I was also a fan of Earthquake through, you know, from when he started through to the natural disasters. I've even put in my notes about the power slam splash combo. Always like that. It was a guy who knew he only had a few moves, but did them all very well. And you don't see enough of that nowadays. You see people who are trying to go over their limits, whereas he knew exactly what his limits were.
Babyface Earthquake, though?
I was all right with it. He was much better as a heel, don't get me wrong, but I could put up with him.
Yeah,
I've only got four lines worth of notes. I told you about the match, what I thought of the match, but
that's actually
quite
impressive for this one.
But no, much better as a heel, and as a babyface, I'd probably say much better in the tag team. It would have been, I actually wouldn't have done something like the natural disasters. It would have been a big man, little man sort of thing.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I don't know who I'd put as the little man, but that's sort of, if they were going to do a tag team, that's the way I would do it. Kind of like a, you know, I mean, obviously different sizes, but sort of like an Enzo Big Cass sort of thing. You know, yeah, you could have the little guy be the face in peril, and then the big man comes in and mops up.
One thing I will say in defense of this project early on is that we should get through it without too many more mentions of Enzo Amore. So you've used one up there, Ben. So nobody else listening to this, if you want to be on this show, it's an Enzo free zone from here on in. Okay.
I was only using that as an example, guys. So I was only using that as an example.
But yeah, make sure you put that on the record. God, I fucking hate that. Another match which was there, and I do think that as we go forward during this project, I need to get used to it. It's, again, I like to break my matches down, but it's pretty much already done for me when this one turns up. Stuck at the end of the taping. Like, about the mid-card babyface to get a win. That's what these ones exist for. And, you know, the cameras are rolling. Let's just stick it on a video. And I'm fine with that. It's okay. It's fine. Just, I feel Earthquake had fallen rather quickly by this point. Yes, he's got the tag team titles with or a tag team title match at WrestleMania 8 when Money Inc. just walk out, because I've watched WrestleMania 8 recently, so it's still fresh in my mind. But I just struggle with him as a face, really. It's one of those where, and it's happened a lot certainly since, where the big guy does everything he really can as a heel, then he becomes the smiling goof baby face.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially at this company. Anywhere up to the next 30 years, you can do it all the way up to Carly and beyond, really. And you have to expect that in this company. But here, he made the most of it. And any chance I get to see Repo Man on my screen, I will take it. We don't get a Repo Man skit here. I'm hoping they're going to be lurking on some of the videos as we go forward. If they are, do let me know. We'll let you know how you can contact me a bit later on. And I will push those ones up in the pecking order. So, back to the Whackers. Wouldn't Mum be proud of us? Hang on, aren't they supposed to be cousins?
That was the whole gimmick.
And Mum would be proud of us and their cousins. Okay, that explains a lot.
Every promo they do, it's Cousin Butch and Cousin Luke.
Exactly. I think we might have read a lot into that one, if you know what I mean. I'm not going to go on that one any further. Proof in pudding. They have drilled through the wall now, and they come across an electrical cable. They use their teeth to test it. Well, a man can dream. In fact, they ask Al to come in, and he gets zapped, complete with cartoonish facial expression and that zapping sound. The very same sound used when The Undertaker ascended from the video wall at Royal Rumble 94. Mid-90s recycling made flesh. And now we get some very welcome darkness on our screen. They find the emergency light, and Alfred seems to be done for. So they decide to throw it over to Gene whilst they, and this one really worried. This one really worried me, whilst they administer CPR. That Alfred Hayes, he's a good sport, isn't he?
Well, you know, it was one of those, again, it was so cheesy. It went beyond the realms of being bad back into being good again.
I actually agree with you.
Thanks.
It was so late 92, early 93 cheese ball. It just... Okay, I mean, not going to say it's either good or it's not. It's either bad or it's bad, but you either like it bad or you dislike it bad. This was bad that I liked.
It wasn't even like a bad 80s comedy. We're sort of sitting into 60s and 70s. You could tell sort of Vince was like, oh, yeah, this is my sort of humour. It's like, no.
Oh, it's the last word in humour for Vince, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is a person who thinks that somebody being thrown into a swimming pool fully clothed is the first and last word in comedy. So, Englishman in his late 50s helping out the bushwhackers with the electrics and getting zapped by doing so.
bumbling Englishman, funny. Bushwhackers, funny. Put them together, funny.
So it works with suck and it works with funny then.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to give up, haven't you, and just go with what you're given and take it from there. I should say your mileage may vary. I wouldn't say I'm necessarily recommending this segment on the WWE Network, but I think Ben and I were able to see the inverted commas humour in it.
Yeah, we got the point.
I wasn't expecting Marx Brothers level during any of this video anyway, so you can't say I was disappointed. Manner your expectations accordingly would be my advice.
Saturday Night Live, it is not, kids.
Saturday Night's main event, it could be seen as quite close to. So, drum roll, please. Why don't you, Mr. Locke, introduce the next segment for? I know you have been chomping at the bit, pun intended, to get your own chops around this one. What have we got next?
We have got next Yokozuna cooking for the single man. It's Yokozuna, Mr. Fuji, and Mean Gene just being brilliant. I will hand you over to Mr. McNamara, who will play-by-play the whole segment.
I will, as much as I could do. I managed to get 10 lines out of Yokozuna eating stuff, which is quite impressive, but here we go. 15,000 calories a day, we learn. Gene and Yoko and Fuji are at a restaurant. So first off, we have an appetizer of shrimp and chicken, and of course, plenty of rice. cooked steamed rice, no less. Okay. Gene checks out the waitress, because of course he does, and the meal is eaten. Although we don't see that one happen. Gene then struggles with chopsticks, and I can empathise with that. And now the raw fish has turned up. We get Gene's first, oh, of the day, as plates of the stuff appear. Plenty of Yoko close-ups, then Gene tries to bow out, but he has no such luck. Instead, a chef emerges to prepare the next course in front of them, and I must say, I am always impressed by that sort of thing. And that is definitely enough steak for 10 people, ribeye no less. I wonder who is going to wolf that down. It is, of course, the big man, and he does so with no trouble at all, and no discernible camera cuts that I can ascertain. In fact, it's 11 steaks. And yes, he does this every day. And you know what? Those prawns look good as well. And now, a bit later than you might have thought, it is time to pile on the rice. Yoko chows that and steals some of Gene's plate too. This is why we know he's cooking for the single man, because Yokozuna is just a single man, as in one person. I didn't laugh as hard as that one. Oakland hopes a sayonara is coming, but that's not before we get dessert and we are out with another. Oh.
It's so good.
Much like us for Gene, after eating three mouthfuls of this, the floor is yours.
Where do I start? So this is one of those examples of sort of the three straight men making something unbelievably funny. You know, Yoko does not say one word during it. He's just eating. As Rory's mentioned, sort of Gene is the interviewer, asking the questions, letting at the waitress, you know, wondering what's coming next with the food. Fuji explaining to Gene what's going on with all, you know, how eating all this steak and prawns and stuff is so important to Yoko's diet. I have put in my notes, who wouldn't want to go out for dinner with Fuji and Gene? That'd be a great night out, wouldn't it? That'd be fantastic.
I tell you what.
The story
only problem with that is, if it's a problem, you're going to lose Gene early on, because he's going to have other engagements that will suddenly crop up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I have made a note in my notes, Gene perving on the waitress, so we both got that. That was, you kind of know where mine and Rory's mind are at times.
Gene's idea. I'm sure that wasn't written in the script. It didn't need to be.
Gene struggling with the chopsticks. I think we've all been there. I don't do chopsticks either, Gene.
Alison, my fiance, she is the doyen of chopsticks. Every time we have Chinese food, she tries and she fails. I can barely even hold the fucking things, let alone use. I can't even have the bowl in my hand and shovel it into my mouth. I even struggle with that. It's a pretty sight.
I have this coordination condition. So things like holding a pen properly, I struggle with. So you can imagine what I'm like with chopsticks. It's not a pretty sight. So yeah, I am full on knife and fork guy when it comes to my Chinese. I loved Fuji going into an almost orgasmic state over the steaks. He was like, as every bit was being put down, and I was so hungry after that. After watching it, I was like, I need some steak now. Not 11. I even made a note of the chef. I've even mentioned his name. He was that good.
I didn't get his name. Wow. Well played.
I know. This is the kind of research and attention detail you're going to get from me.
For this second, that doesn't surprise me.
But like I say before, it's just one of those examples of the three straight guys. You don't need the big comedy guy sometimes. It just works.
The thing about this, it wasn't really a comedy segment, was it?
No. It was I honestly don't think it was meant to be a comedy segment. It was just, it was almost like an interview, wasn't it? It was meant to be like an interview, and then it just descended.
Because this is a segment I'd heard about before. I knew the name, Cooking for the Single Man with Yokozuna. I'd never seen it. I didn't know what it was. So I was expecting some sort of stand-up with he and Gene trying to cook or something, which would have been a disaster. In the background. But it was just Yokozuna eating for 10 minutes. And it was strangely captivating in that respect.
You've got the three of them, and it's just the two of them having an interview while the other guy eats. That's basically what it is.
And it is character building in a very, very literal sense. So, Yokozuna eating. Okay. And yes, I can see why a supposed sumo wrestler would eat 15,000 calories a day. And here I am getting a bloody good example of it. And knowing what we now know about Rodney Anawahi's own dietary habits, it probably wasn't too far off the mark anyway. I don't think he needed to do much outside preparation for this skit. Let's say that.
That's it. There was no research being done. This was like full on tea.
What do you need me to do for this one? Well, you just need to eat tea for 30 minutes. I'll be there.
Yeah. You're paying? Yeah.
I'm not so sure this one was on the house, pal.
Yeah. But Vince would have had to have foot the bill for this, or Bruce or whoever was filming it.
Well, given where the company was in late 92, I'm surprised they managed to get to as reputable a restaurant as they did.
No, it's one of the, I just put it a notch below Fuji Vice for me. That's how good this was.
High praise indeed, Mr.
Mark. Notch below.
Well, Fuji Vice sits in its own universe, doesn't it? I'm not even going to pretend anything can ever touch that.
Yeah. But like I say, it wasn't meant to be funny, but it just was.
Because it was just long enough where I was smirking a lot during it, even though there were no attempts at gags, no stupid sight jokes or anything like that. It was this big guy, his manager and an interviewer sitting around a table eating or not eating Japanese food while somebody cooks it for them. Okay, but it worked.
One guy eats while the other two sort of bounce lines off each other.
It's one of those where I would have been more than happy to see an 8-10 minute video of Yokozuna squashing jobbers here. But this tells me a lot more about the man than that ever could.
Exactly.
This is him. This is his training, if you like. They even made that point. This is what he does. So, okay, I'm fine with it. I really am.
Yeah, you learn more about him in those sort of 5-10 minutes than you ever would, watching a jobber match.
You know, we've seen, and I'm sure I'll get to them on the tapes, the training videos for Hogan or whatsoever. This was Yokozuna's training video.
Yeah.
And he was really working those arms up and down there with the chopsticks, so that definitely counts. Do definitely check out the Cooking for the Single Man segment. But I do recommend, as Ben has alluded to there, that you probably eat before you get there. Otherwise,
definitely. You're
ordering 11 steaks for yourself. I know, you know, times are hard at the moment. There's not a whole lot to do but eat. But even I would say, I'm no dietary expert, but maybe not follow Yokozuna's lead here. It could not
It
Don't
worked.
Come back to
it
me
worked
for years time. Okay.
It worked for him to a certain point.
That's a story for another day. Okay, now the real selling point, or at least it would have been for me, and I'm sure it was for you at the time, Ben. Selling point of this video, and that is our Bret Hart profile, as it calls it.
Yes.
It is actually Gorilla Monsoon and his WrestleMania 9 cap dating this one, introducing Bret outside some stadium or another. Did you be able to catch where they were?
I didn't catch where they were.
Again, everybody, if you do know where they recorded this interview with Gorilla and Bret, do let us know. But it's time to hear about the Steel Ladder Match. Bret's turn of phrase. I just fucking love it so much.
The Steel Ladder Match.
You know, the Steel Ladder Match. Bret puts over Sean a bit, but then he says HBK could not get past him on his best day. See, he just can't fucking help himself, can he? But never
even back then.
Even there in late 92, early 93, he just fucking has to get the dig in, doesn't he? Gorilla pushes at never change. Gorilla pushes that neither of them had had a ladder match before. And then Bret kind of sort of says the whole thing was his idea in the first place because he's Bret Hart. And of course he does. So let's get to this match then. The ladder match taking place in Portland, Maine, between Bret Hart, the Intercontinental Champion, defending it against, of course, Shawn Michaels. In fact, just before we start, Ben, so you'd obviously seen this video before.
Yes.
Multiple occasions. I have seen this match before on the first ladder match DVD. which I can just see in the rack now from where I'm sat, actually. Next ladder match, yep. 2. That's some rare organisation for me, having two alphabetical numerical order next to each other. So when you first saw this one, if you can go back that far, say, as a fan at 12, 13, it's probably not a fair thing to ask, but oh well anyway. What expectations did you have going in? What did you think you were going to be seeing? Get back into that mindset.
I wasn't particularly bothered about the ladder match stick, but I knew there was going to be a good match there between these two. I was already firmly on the Brett and Sean train at that point. I will be honest, I didn't know what a ladder would add to that. I wasn't particularly bothered by weapons at that stage, but yeah, I was definitely on their wavelength in terms of, you know, I was a big fan of the Rockers and the Hart Foundation, so I knew what both could do, and I knew both could do a singles run, or had a singles run in them.
Let's see how it goes, shall we? Let's revolutionise the business over the next few minutes. Let's do it now. The commentary team, who are, again, Gorilla and Alfred, seem genuinely interested into how this one is going to go. One bit of a head fuck for me was hearing the rules of a ladder match explained so definitively and specifically. I mean, where we are with ladder matches now, that feels like a bit of a trip to me. It's like if you go back and watch a football match from the 80s that ended in a penalty shootout, which the commentator explains the rules. You know, you don't need that to be done now because they're so commonplace. Such a trip getting back into... As if there was ever a time ladder match rules need to be explained, you know. But the belt is 12 feet high, perhaps 14, and indeed we cannot see it via the hard camera. Sean is in first with some punches in the corner and that flip into a hip toss thing, but Brett saw it coming and lands on his feet out of that, taking Sean down with a backdrop. Whips to the buckle and Sean hits hard stomp to the bollocks, then a good old heat and diving European. Sorry, good old heat. Not written there. I think that's a good old heat. I'm not sure what that's meant.
Heat segment, maybe?
I think that's autocorrect doing something for me. I'll just cut that out. I'll just go straight. I'll go straight to the European uppercut. Okay. Let me cut that out. Whip to the buckle and Sean hits it hard. Stomp to the bollocks and then a diving European uppercut by Brett. They now exchange blows on the mat, and this one already has a very different feel to most things in the summer of 92. Indeed, all things. Sean catches him with a knee and takes the opportunity to grab the ladder. He drags it close to the ring, but Brett was waiting for him. Hard whip to the post, and HBK is getting quite the caning here. Back in with no ladder yet for some softening up, and now Hart fancies his chances. Sherry tries to stop him, and Brett goes after her. But Sean uses the distraction to start climbing. Brett scampers back to pull him down. The crowd were worried then. After a scrap, Brett has a go, then he comes down along with the ladder. Sean then uses it as a ramrod right into the gut of the hitman. He tries again, but this time hits the post. Alfred says he can read Sean's thoughts, and you don't want to stay there for too long. But another whip into the ladder, now set up by the ropes. Brett is down, now Sean is going for it. No, Brett grabs him by the ankle. He still manages to get his hand on the belt, though, but Brett snatches it down, and the ladder falls on HBK. Brett climbs now, and the belt is swaying around a bit. Sean climbs on the same side and headbutts him down. Sean climbs right next to Brett to get stopped early, so instead he closes the ladder and forces Brett into it. Sean eats a boot off the rope at a second rope clothesline that is a thing of beauty, and a great sell by Sean off it as well. Brett then with a slingshot and Michaels hits the propped up ladder. Backbreaker and HBK is down. Hitman sets up a ladder, but no, Sean is up. So he reset with a fist fight and then a double down. Sean comes to first and the ladder is set up right under the belt, but both men climb. And the ladder goes down rather early. Not sure that was planned. Brett gets his foot grabbed by Sherry, and then here comes that patented reverse crescent kick by Sean. I think that one needs a slightly punchier name. Teardrop suplex, that was his finisher at the time, and now Michaels can go for it. He climbs slowly, but he doesn't get there. Here's Gorilla. He has to climb one more rung. Why doesn't he realise that? Oh, Gorilla, such a stickler. Brett recovers with a drop kick to send Sean right out of the ring. He can then climb and get it himself before Sean can recover. Ben, history has been made here in Portland, Maine.
Well, you know, when you watch this back now, you can just see, just admire the work. I've already wrote in my notes that it was clear Sean and Chris Jericho used this match as inspiration. You could see how good was it to see a psychological ladder match. Absolutely. Compared to the high spots fest we're used to. people know on this fine website, I do a column called Unpopular Opinion. I've got a little one, and then we'll talk about the match properly. I always preferred Sherry's version of Sexy Boy to Sean's. Ooh, there we go.
That's a call, isn't it?
I know. I've made it.
Ben, you never have a day off on this, do you?
No, got it.
It is to your credit. Sorry, it is to your credit that you just keep on bringing those unpopular opinions.
You've got to live the gimmick.
Even when you're wrong, as you are on this one.
I've also got in my notes the 1992 fat-shaming commentary of Gorilla Monsoon. If you've... he doesn't hold back on Sherry, but bless him. Brett plays the wily veteran so well, doesn't he? He does it throughout his career. Even in 92, he plays the wily veteran. Obviously, he's had that ladder match experience and stampede that we don't know about, but you can see him practically holding Sean's hand throughout this match, and it's to his credit.
What did you think? We could break this down further. What did you think of the finish for this one?
We talked about
this being psychological. Like, Sean bumps right the way out the fucking ring, and that's some heavy stuff for 92.
Yeah, but I think for the crowd to believe it as a finish, for it being the first ladder match, it had to have something like that. You couldn't just have the guy, let's say, laid in the ring right by the ladder. That wouldn't have worked for 92. No.
Only thing that surprised me about this one was how short it was. It was only 12 and a half minutes.
Yeah.
It felt a lot longer. And obviously, that is a positive comment.
Well, if I remember rightly, I mean, you might, I know you know a bit more about this kind of thing than me. Wasn't this meant to be like a test run for them too?
That is my understanding, yes.
Like, if WrestleMania wasn't in London, this was going to be the match. So maybe it was a bit of that, you know, just give like 10 minutes, just see how it goes, and then we can sort of flesh it out after.
Please keep talking, Ben. I'm actually trying to yank Bret Hart's book off the rack as we speak, so I can try and find out from the man himself.
But no, I'm also glad that in the end Sean took control of the ladder match from Brett. I don't think Brett needed the ladder match really. Sean did to get Brett was already over to that point. He didn't need a selling match, whereas Sean did to put himself over. And I think that's why I'm always more of a Brett man than a Sean man, because Brett had that body of work beforehand. Sean needed something to take him to that next level, which was WrestleMania 10.
Would the WrestleMania 10 match have happened without this one?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But the point I'm making is Brett didn't need the match. It was Brett's idea, but Brett didn't need the match. That's the point I'm trying to make. Sean needed this. Brett was already over like Rover, and he was, you know, what was he about? What would you say, about 2 years ahead of Sean in development in terms of that top level guy?
Yeah.
So he didn't need this. He was already getting, you know, he was already getting called the excellence of execution by Gorilla all the time. He didn't need things like this.
I found it in Brett's book. Now here we go.
Excellent.
The following day, I'll do it in his voice, as tempting as it is. Well, you know. Okay. The following day, I arrived early at the building in Portland, Maine, to make sure that the 15-foot ladder for my match with Shawn Michaels could be climbed up on both sides and that it was sturdy and safe to work with. I was dog tired. I'd been working hard to build up my cardio, and the three matches I'd wrestled the night before could only help. Wow. As long as I didn't get too beat up. Early that morning, I'd worked out at the local gym and was amazed to see Ric Flair blazing a trail on the Stairmaster next to me, despite being hungover from his usual night of hard drinking. Flair was easily one of the fittest wrestlers I have ever seen. More on that later. As he sweated out his poisons, he didn't show any sign of slowing down. Later on, Sean came and found me in the dressing room, scratching his head as he tried to figure out what this crazy idea of a ladder match was all about. That's mind-blowing, isn't it? I knew how successful this type of match had been in my dad's territory, and I could just imagine its potential in the WWF. That night, Sean and I put on a decent trial run. Unfortunately, Vince missed it. Of course Vince fucking missed it. He's not going to be watching it.
This is the man who sees everything.
Well, even this, at the end of a long, long taping in Portland, Maine, he's not going to hang around for a match which ended up revolutionising the business. He's got skits where the bushwhackers come round to fix your house to write, Ben. The man has priorities. Yeah. You know this.
Priorities. Priorities, pal.
Priorities, pal. Yeah, so there is just the idea of Sean coming up to Bretton not knowing what a ladder match is.
But the match as a whole, if we go, you know, we'll go back to the match, it was one of those, wasn't it, that got better as it was going. It was sort of very they wrestled it as a normal match to begin with, and then the ladder got involved, which I quite liked, actually. It was you know, like, say, psychology in a ladder match doesn't happen that often.
No, I think it is a little tentative in the early going. It's
almost from
the first bell to when they first bring the ladder in, they're not quite sure what to do. I said in my notes when they were having the brawling segment, and it was pretty hefty brawling segment too, that they were definitely going for something different here. But thinking about it now, I'm not quite sure they knew what that was going to be until the ladder came into play, which I suppose is the whole point of a ladder match. What happens before it gets brought into the ring is rather perfunctory.
Yeah.
Was the case then, is the case now. But putting together the structure of the match was, you can see the holes a little bit, although I can certainly appreciate it.
It's almost like going back to school, isn't it, or doing an experiment, a trial and error, isn't it? What were, you know, what's going to work, what didn't work, and they weren't throwing loads of ideas out there, but you could see, like you said, what wasn't going to work, what we're not going to do going forward. Obviously, I'm glad now that enough people saw it that wanted to carry on with the idea.
Yeah, there's a reason I mentioned the finish first and work backwards from there, because that was perhaps obviously the thing that really stuck in my mind. It's one of those matches you really need to watch closely. There's no, as I said, there's no real, inverted commas, spots to speak of.
No.
But then, in fairness, I don't think anybody sitting down to watch this match would expect them. It's one you do need to watch closely. It's one you might be rewarded by watching closely multiple times as well, because I'm not going to try, as much as both these guys involved my one and two in GWE and always will be, but any time I compile a wrestler's list, I'm not going to try and put this one over as a lost classic. I don't think it's that. It's one of those where if they had ever had this match again, I don't know, 2 years down the line, things were very different then, of course, then it might well have been even better. It's the template, isn't it, for what we would get 18 months later.
Like I say, it's a trial and error. It's fine. It's, you know, correcting your mistakes, like you say, 18 months later, you know, putting it out there. It's the first. You're going to make mistakes, are you? You're always going to make mistakes with the first, and then you'll correct as you go along.
See, if it was taking place now, the bits and pieces we saw in this match would be put together as part of a 24 documentary for the network rather than being a match in their own right. Just to date this podcast, Edge and Beth Phoenix working in his ring downstairs, that sort of thing, you know.
Amazing.
Do watch that documentary on the network if you haven't, by the way. It is incredible. Go on, Ben. Tell everybody what you told me about that documentary yesterday. When we
are you referring to where I'm placing that documentary?
I am indeed.
Okay, so I'm living the gimmick. I said to Rory I would put that below, just below the ECW documentary for the best documentary they have ever done.
I praise, but you know what? I think it's fair praise.
I mean, I'm not a massive Edge fan in the ring, but he's such a likable guy.
Absolutely agree.
Such a likable guy, and Beth's amazing. I mean, you know, I mean, as well as being a badass, she is like perfect wife material. And you know, and everybody comes across so well in it, don't they? Like Dash Wilder comes across well, Christian comes across well. Everybody. My favorite bit, I said to you, didn't I? The favorite bit was the retraining, but I had another favorite bit that came after that I didn't see. which was Aleister Black's look of shock in the gorilla position. That was amazing.
Oh yes, I know the bit you mean now.
He was like, "What?"
Do definitely check out The Edge. It's called The Second Mountain. Easy to find on the network, I'm sure, whenever this show goes out. But I will say this. Your hankies should be at the ready when you watch it.
Absolutely.
It's quite the emotional roller coaster, but well worth it. Again, it's one of those. It was only an hour and 15 minutes. Felt like a lot longer. And that is in high, high praise. Worth the time, I think, Ben, to talk about that one.
That Foo Fighters montage at the end, that got me. I was like, oh no.
See, License to Music, there's a place for it after all.
Yes.
And they were able to acquire the rights to that one very easily, but that is definitely another story for another day. So let's sum up this ladder match then, Ben. Would you recommend people check it out, but maybe, again, manner your expectations slightly when you see some match. Expect a 5-star, you'll be disappointed. If you want to see the building, we now know very well, you've got something.
I had it, if we're going to star rate it, I had it at 3.75.
Yeah,
which I think's about right. It's one of those, like I keep saying, you know, it's the first or something. You know, if you go in there thinking it's Brett versus Shawn, it's going to be a classic. No, we already know that those two are, they should put classics on, but they don't for whatever reason. So temper your expectation accordingly. But is it a good match? Is it a good way to spend your 10, 15 minutes? Hell yeah, it is. It's better than Crush versus the Berserker. Let's go that way.
Well, if that's your frame of comparison, that's a bit unfair on everybody involved, isn't it? Really?
I know. I was just being facetious. No, it is a really good. It's a really good match. But if you're going in there expected to be blown away because it's these two, that's not going to happen.
I get the sense that Brett himself knew that this match wasn't going to be a classic, and it was put on as a practice, effectively, as he said in his book.
Yeah, you know, just try it.
Somebody else pinched the idea in his 18 months later, and there you go, the business changed accordingly.
It's a trial run, and you've got to, I know you said for 18 months later, but it's a trial run for 2 months later. That's the, you know, he didn't know at that point that SummerSlam was going to be at Wembley, so
no, indeed.
Those two were getting ready for that.
A fascinating historical document, I think we can call this one.
Yes.
If you know what you're going to get, I recommend checking it out. And take some notes as well and see what spots, again, spots is really the right word, will crop up again in later ladder matches. And I think the ultimate example of this style of ladder match was, as you rightly say, No Mercy 2008 between Shawn and Jericho. Yeah. I do wish you would see that style of ladder match a bit more often, you know, but there you go.
Yeah, you don't need to always be flashy on the ladder. You can in police psychology if you want. It's not that you don't have to go money in the bank style all the time.
Less can sometimes be more.
Of course.
Just sometimes. So we go back to Gorilla and Brett. He calls Brett the most fighting champion of all time, and we learn about our next match, which is not the one where Brett won it, but where he actually defended it against Kamala. And I've actually written here as a separate note, and I am going to try to do this one in the Brett voice, because you've got to, beyond the shadow of a doubt. There are two people who say beyond the shadow of a doubt a lot. They are Bret Hart and they are Alan Shearer. I know who I would much rather hear saying it. For those of you who don't know, look Alan Shearer up, everybody. I'm not going to waste my time talking about him now. Most boring goal celebration in history, Alan Shearer. That's
all I'm going to say. also the best. Never change, Al. Never change.
Mr. Chris noting defense when they Blackburn won the championship, indeed. Oh, God. And they call Bret Hart boring. I say, just compare him to Alan Shearer. He's chuckles the clown by comparison. Anyway, let's get Brett versus Kamala out of the way first, shall we? Fonzie is the ref in this one, which I did pop for. And I tell you what, Kamala's gimmick is bloody uncomfortable to watch these days. A let's go Brett chant goes up, and that is clearly not piped in, as he ducks and weaves away from the big fella. Waistlock, but that doesn't go far. Kamala misses a charge in the corner. Brett goes to work on the arm of the Mighty One, as Sean Mooney on commentary here calls him. He grinds on the arm, but the power is there. Brett can escape two attempts at some sort of elbow then. Dropkick staggers Kamala, who after a conference calls for a test of strength. They didn't actually have a conference call. Exist in 92. On the arm Brett worked on, as Alfred notes that as a bit of subterfuge, and Brett wisely says no to it. And he does so on a second occasion. The commentators debate as to who is behind Kim Chi's mask, and Brett then does accept the test on the third time, but immediately works on the arm after an attempted sucker punch because he saw it coming. Glorious stuff. Brett gets knocked down after a takedown attempt in the middle of the ring, though. Bear hug for a long time, but Brett finally gets out. Classic offense by the champ, and then a two off a clothesline. Elbow puts him down, and is it sharpshooter time? No, it's not, as Kim Chi and Harvey Whippleman are on the apron, but Brett ducks and Kim Chi takes a shot. Brett from that is able to roll up Kamala to retain. They attack afterwards, but Kamala accidentally splashes Whippleman, then Brett sees them off. Ben, I'm sure there's a reason this one didn't feature on Brett's The Best There Is, The Best There Was, and The Best There Ever Will Be DBT sets, but I had fun.
Yeah, it's not bad. I've got in my notes that Brett, I think, this is a challenge, this match, to put a watchable, salvageable match on with Kamala. And he pretty much succeeded, I thought.
It was watchable, wasn't it? Again, the psychology was there.
Yeah.
People say about Brett very unfairly that unless it was a big match on pay-per-view or on TV, he would go out there and dog it, and he had these levels that he would go through, and he was barely above level two. He was at level five here against freaking Kamala. I mean, that arm psychology work was ingenious, or it would be for anybody else than Bret Hart, who could breathe this sort of stuff. That was glorious stuff.
I never buy that like a criticism, because I think everybody does that. I don't think there's anybody who, you know, you're gonna have different. Let's put it this way: you're gonna have different levels of work. Them guys who were on WrestleMania the other night, they're gonna have different level of work than if they were doing it as a house show, you know. So let's not use that as a criticism for somebody at any time.
Yeah, if you're in the red zone all the time, you're just going to end up burning yourself out, aren't you?
Exactly.
Again, slow it down when you need to, when you can afford to.
Less is more.
Well, I do sort of miss this thing where somebody just gets a random shot for the WWF Championship out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like Brett versus Fatu a couple of months after this.
But that was Brett's whole gimmick, wasn't it? The whole fighting champion thing. And so, and like I know, and like I said, I know where he said it, but you could tell Brett sort of took this as like a challenge to put Kamala through a watchable match. Like, if I can do this, I can do it with anybody. I mean, this would have been a couple of months before Yokozuna, so they were probably using Kamala as like always a template to that. Can you put a big guy through a match like this?
And he did. He did. He didn't need to, but he did.
No. I've also wrote, I was very glad to hear about Sean Mooney in 93. I thought we were going to go through a whole Coliseum video without hearing his dulcet tones, but they were there.
He can't have been long for the company after this one, can he, Mooney?
No. Well, yeah, he was on that very first Raw, wasn't he?
On the first Raw, outside, yes.
That was about it, wasn't it?
I believe he does appear as the host of the unreleased DVD set that came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I know he's back in with the company. I remember that.
And, of course, he's got a podcast, but who doesn't these days?
Hi!
Okay, shall we get to the other reason while we're here?
Let's do it.
Rather than putting over or otherwise people who do a lot of podcasts. Podcast machine, some of us not too far away have been called, you know.
That is right. Podcast legend.
Oh, stop. Yeah, machine could be taken in a bad way. Legend has no negative connotations, unless you think I've been doing this for far too long. This ain't my first rodeo, kids. So, now we hear about the title match. I don't know why it came after the Kamala match, but never mind. Brett says it was his only shot in his father's hometown of Saskatoon, and there was nothing that Ric Flair or anybody else was going to do to stop him. We hear about Brett's sprained ankle and dislocated finger that both take place during this match. And now let's get to it. First things first, I've got in my notes here, Flair's WWF version of his theme is rather sloppy, isn't it? I'm very glad that when he came back in 2001, they went with the real deal. So here is the match. At this point, never televised, never shown anywhere else. Ric Flair versus Bret Hart for the WWF Championship. October the 12th, 1992, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Oh, look at my notes here. I've got a quick swig of water. You're going to hear me do this, everybody. Okay, let's get this done. We get the lock up after Flair does his tap of the shoulder thing and everybody is dead even right from the start. Good. And there is the early woo from the Nature Boy. He grabs a headlock and he works Brett down to the mat and he really wrenches on it for a series of early two counts. Brett is up, but only into a hammerlock, which though he reverses. Bit of talking from Brett there, I notice. Another lock up with Brett climbing on the second rope to work on the hand and arm. Hebner tries to break it up, but no such luck there. Flair with a sharp kick to give himself control, and this one has already switched a few times so far, and I approve. Hart blocks a suplex, then gets off a marvellous one of his own for a two count. Back body drop and a sharpshooter attempt already. Nope, it's just a shot to the balls. Flair grabs a breather after that. Back in with another lock up, and now Brett gets on the first headlock, and now Flair gets that into a wrist lock, and Brett switches up from that. He then talks for left arm, and there is, oh God, there is some sauce on this one, isn't there? Brett into a short arm takedown and he works into an armbar. Flair counters with a drop toe hold, but Brett is right back on him with a hammerlock on the ground and now he stands up into it. Flair is bringing the vocal selling here as we are in the corner again. Flair getting nothing at the moment with Hitman controlling all the arm work, but he does then walk into a boot. Flair buys some time by dumping Brett over the top, but shoulder block and sunset flip. Flair does not go down though, and Gorilla calls this one a classic. Brett with another sunset flip and he gets it, with the help of Flair's arse being shown, which is duty bound, is it not? Hard and fast clotheslines by the Hitman and the crowd are feeling it, as well they might. Flair escapes again, as Hayes calls perfect, Flair's consecutive, close enough. Good old thumb to the eye might just help for Flair here, but the Brett bump certainly will. He starts to go to work on the left leg and he has made us wait a while for the... He starts to go to work on the left leg and he has made us wait a while for the chop. You keep your mouth shut. Running knee drop, but Hart rolls out of it. Is it figure of four time? No, it's not, because Brett gets kicked off and that's where the finger dislocation comes into play. He then gets on his own figure of four and Flair is always great at selling the pain of it, let it be said. A few two counts in shoe, but then he gets the ropes to a fair few boos. Brett misses an elbow though, but that allows him to snap his dislocated finger back into place himself. And the camera catches Perfect wincing at that. Oh, who wouldn't? Hart with a sleeper, but Flair is able to side suplex his way out of it with the minimum of fuss. Perfect goes into his pocket, but we see a small package attempt by Flair for a close two. Butterfly suplex for the same result, and now the knee hits. And there's Excedrin headache number 35. And there's Glad I Retired, thank you Gorilla, and a big chop for two. Flair goes for more quick covers, but no dice. He argues with the ref, but then neatly gets caught from a roll-up. Flair takes out the leg quickly, though, and here is his figure of four. Brett feeds off the energy of this capacity crowd trademark, despite Perfect screaming at him to give it up. And once more, the selling here is exemplary. Brett is able to roll into the ropes, but the lateral collateral ligaments could already be damaged, though, and Gorilla is bringing all of his classics. Hello?
Hello.
Just got no internet connection on my screen. Can you still hear me?
Oh, yeah.
I can still hear you fine. And according to my Wi-Fi, it's still connected.
Yeah. I can hear you loud and clear.
Brilliant. I'll press on if I need to do any more afterwards. We'll just carry on. I think Skype's just going wobbly. Where was I? We'll go to...
You've done Excedrin headache. You've done...
Have I done Glad I Retired and lateral collateral ligaments?
Yes.
Okay, I'll keep that in there. And Gorilla is bringing the classics here. Flair is now rattled and kicks away wildly at the knee. Blair can barely pitch onto it. Now that is dedication to your craft. So he collapses and Flair teases another figure of four. But Brett catches him by surprise for a cradle, getting a two. Hitman with a second win and he unloads with some right hands, but Flair just wipes him out. He goes to the top rope and you know where this story ends. He really cut a flip on the fall too when he hit the mat. Backdrop by Brett and a cover for 2.7. Russian leg sweep? reverse neckbreaker, as Gorilla calls it. See, I told you he was bringing his classics. For a two, and a backbreaker, and a second rock elbow, and a two count, but Perfect pulls him off the cover before a three. Suplex for two, and I should note, Brett is hooking the leg on the pin attempts here, which is rare for him. Desperation chops by Flair, but down come the fucking straps. Magnificent superplex, and the crowd are there for this one. Sharpshooter going on, and he turns it over. Perfect tries to detract the referee, as Alfred would have it, but to no avail. Flair gives up. Brett the Hitman Hart is the World Wrestling Federation champion. Hayes gets it right this time when he calls Brett a very, very worthy champion indeed. Brett is clearly living and loving every second of this. There is nothing fake about those celebrations. Sadly, we don't get the interview he did with Mean Gene after this one, where he told us the biggest dreams can still come true. But we do get the match in its full 27-minute entirety. Mr. Ben Locke, Bret Hart winning the WWE title for the first time against Ric Flair on a house show nobody saw unless they built this.
I don't know what he says about both of us, but I was obviously listening to you. We have both got on our notes the Flair full moon, the Excedrin headache, and the 27 minutes of excellence, which I think kind of tells you exactly where we are as our humour and our sensibilities are. It's just a classic.
As it should be, in my opinion.
Yes. It's just a classic, isn't it? You know, I love that there's no cheating from Flair in the first 10 minutes. It's just wrestling. And it's only after 10 minutes Flair decides. I can't remember if it was just a poke in the eye or something like that. Yeah. I am amazed, like you say, that this just never got aired anywhere or even on prime time. It was just a full-on exclusive. And I've also got about Flair, about Brett going for the figure four as well. It was just that brilliant counter for counter hold wrestling that you just don't see anymore. These are just two guys who know what they're doing. And, you know, Rick was obviously very happy to Rick was very happy to put Brett over at that point.
Yes, he was. The story, for those of you who don't know it, that Flair had to drop the title quickly because he was having ear trouble, I believe is right, and his equilibrium was affected. Not that
something
you would
like
tell
that,
watching this match. We got classic Flair during this one and more besides, but that's why the decision was made to drop the title so quickly and why we didn't get to see this on any television until this video became available. Now, no wonder in the very first segment for this video Alfred mentioned this match, knowing full well that it would have been the main selling point.
It is the selling point of the tape, isn't it?
But you just, it's, I don't want to sound like a jaded old back in my day name on the marquee fan, although those of you who know me will probably say that's what I am and you've got a case, but I just miss the first 10 minutes of hammerlocks and ankle locks and headlocks, and it's all for a purpose.
Yeah. They're not doing it as rest holds. Everything in it's got a point.
You're right, these aren't rest holds. They're not making it an epic for epic's sake. I'm just going to leave a little pause at that one. There we go.
I'm not going to nick Brett's catchphrase, but it's two excellent wrestlers wrestling excellently.
The story of this match, it's two great wrestlers wrestling each other. That's all it is. Not insignificant bonus of the WWF Championship being up for grabs as well. Don't get me wrong. But that's the story.
Yeah, and it's all you need it to be. It's all you need it to be. You don't need bells and whistles on this.
When Bret Hart says that that is what pro wrestling is at its essence, it's two people using their bodies to tell a great story. That's what they're doing here. And the story is two great wrestlers wanting to be the WWF Championship at the end of it. And they're going to try to out-wrestle the other guy in order to prove they are worthy of that position.
My favourite part of commentary you didn't mention, so I was glad about that. Alfred, doesn't know the cameraman by names, but he knows them by number. There's cameraman number five there, doing his job. Get you right into the heart of the action.
Shall we go back to Brett's book for a second?
Let's do it.
He doesn't mention cameraman number five, so I'm glad you pulled him up on that one.
Brett, how Alfred dare one, you not?
Alfred 1, Ben 2, Ben Nil. Brett Nil. There we go. Where are we? This is on page number 296. I won't go through the whole thing. I just want to mention this. Minutes later, after Brett rolled his ankle, he called for a figure four leg lock. I scooped his legs and limped around to lock it in when he unexpectedly kicked me off sideways. I fell backwards and jammed the middle finger of my left hand on the taut ring rope, snapping it at the knuckle. I sat looking at it and realised that it was bent rather oddly. It felt like I couldn't uncross my fingers. I calmly reached up and grabbed it with my right hand and snapped it back, hearing Kurt groan from the ring floor right behind me as he watched me do it. Nothing was going to ruin this moment! Exclamation mark. Flair called every spot, even the outdated ones. That's interesting. Including a barrage of his painful, stiff, open-handed chops that left handprints across my chest. Some guys liked it stiff, while some worked too light and phony. To me, chops was stupid and brainless and went against everything logical about the business. We're only supposed to pretend we're hurting each other. When you really are hurting and being hurt, you're the mark. The only guy more stupid than the guy chopping you is the guy taking them. I suffered through more than enough chops out of respect, really, before exploding into a huge step back. I suplexed him off the top corner into the ring and stepped into the sharpshooter. My mind flashed back to all of those wrestling magazines I created as a kid, the times I made my own championship belts out of cardboard and broken bottle glass. Ric Flair pounded his hands on the mat, screaming uncle, and my childhood dream became a reality. I was champion of the world. Let's have a brief talk about that, Flair's chops, because it's...
He's so modest, isn't he, Brett?
Yeah,
so modest.
Just so self-effacing, that man. You know? I just wish he'd be a bit more brazen about his career, Brett. Man, put yourself over a little bit more. No one else...
Yeah!
Gonna...
Oh, yeah. Go on, yeah. Brett.
Let's talk about it. Flair's chops. Is it? Does Brett have a case there?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
What you expect is Ric Flair. What you expected from him? It's like one of his trademark things.
Even for you, Mr. Brett Sergeant Hart, Flair isn't going to pull his strikes.
Would it be as if Flair didn't go up to the top rope to be press slammed off? Would he be a bit pissed off that?
Brett will take the butterfly suplex, but he won't take chops, you know. To the chest. Won't do the slam down spot.
I don't know that much about like the whole wrestling etiquette, but I always thought it was the veteran and the heel who led the match. So I don't quite understand Brett's criticism of that.
He'll just get it Flair anyway. He can really.
Yeah,
he talks about it again later in his book, the sold out 98 match. He calls it a typical Flair match, an exercise in non psychology. It's a bit unfair, isn't it?
Yeah. I am a bit disappointed that they didn't do a rematch at the Rumble, though.
Yes. Yes, you could have done that, couldn't you?
That was, you know, you could have quite easily have swapped Razor into that number one position in the Rumble that Flair had, and even have Flair come out and cost Perfect the match, so to build up to Raw. That would have been what I'd have done. Because Flair was obviously out the company. You know, he'd already recorded that Raw match, hadn't he? So he was out the company anyway.
Yes, it was recorded the week before, yeah. And he obviously was shown the next night, Loser Leaves Town against Perfect. You know, I'd never thought of that before. That's a fucking great idea.
I have them sometimes.
Now, you're the one who needs to be a bit more brazen about these things. Take a leap out of Brett's book, Mr. Lock. Yeah, that's... Oh, you couldn't should have done that. I mean, somebody must have seen this match beforehand and saw just how good it was.
Well, you know, obviously this is back before we had the contractually obligated rematches, lazy storytelling crutch that we have today. But you definitely could have done that.
Maybe they were also a bit gun shy about putting this sort of, even for 1992, this is an old school match, that sort of thing, pay per view.
Yeah. You could have made it slightly different though for the pay per view audience, and obviously with Rick going, I think he would have either just gone for it anyway.
Oh, I really wish we'd seen it now.
Sorry,
if it had been a slightly pared down version of this one, say 15-16 minutes, I wish we'd fucking got it.
Yeah. Like, stop. I think you would have had. I mean, I know what I just said about wrestling etiquette, but you maybe would have had Brett leading that match as the champion. So Brett could have put the match on that he wanted.
but what we did get here. I just love Brett bringing the straps down. Oh, baby.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this is 25 minutes of brilliance. Absolute brilliance.
After those 25 minutes up, the time has come now. These straps are coming down, and it is on.
It's one of those matches where you can't... It doesn't reach five stars, but you can't pick a fault with anything in it.
You're so right when you say that, but I'm just thinking about this now out loud. I mean, this didn't make my GWE Top 100.
No, I didn't even
consider it for the list. And now I'm asking myself, why not?
This would have, I mean, yeah, if I'm doing this now, today, I mean, obviously, like, I watched this a couple of weeks ago to remember stuff. This would have got, like, 50, 60.
Yeah, I really should have had it around that range. It's
if I'm putting things like, I mean, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, if I'm putting things like Shawn and Triple H from that Raw on there, this is comparable to that for me.
I'd take this over that any day.
Yeah, but I'm just using my
point. I get your point entirely. Yeah,
that's where if I'm thinking about it now, that's where it would have sat, about 50, 60 in that range.
Yeah, I'd probably have it around about there too, just outside the top 50, I reckon.
Yeah.
It is, but then it's a style I am very much amenable to, so I might have been able to nudge it a little bit higher. I just wish we see the style again. But then, do we have the people on the roster these days? And this is no real slight on them. Who could work a match like this? I don't think you do. It's... Even the prime workers on there.
Well, we you know, this whole WWE style thing that's going on at the moment, this isn't WWE style at all. This is Bret and Rick style. It's not, you know, this hasn't been trained by the company. This has been, you know, and that's one of the major problems we've got now is, you know, matches are all very much the same. Why can't you remember matches or shows from nowadays? Because everything looks and sounds the same now.
Work that arm, point towards the hard camera, da di da di da di da.
Yeah.
This, none of that stuff here. It felt like a lot longer than 28 years ago when I was watching it, but that's a positive, and I miss it.
It was treated like a true sporting contest, even for a quality in video, which I admire a lot.
They barely even left the ring.
No. And like I said earlier, you know, when you're not doing any sort of heel or cheating until 10 minutes into the match, and everything before and everything after has got a point.
That's the hallmark of a great heel. That's what, obviously, you know, Flair was a great heel. Yeah, newsflash, everybody. But,
This is it.
It's the hallmark. He could have cheated any time he wanted. He could have cheated right off the bell. But no, he's got respect for this guy. He's going to try and out-wrestle him first.
And then he goes to the doctor.
Just quickly going back to the GWE list, I'm fascinated to see, it might well be out by the time this show goes out, where this match finishes in the composite list. Yeah. I wonder if a lot of other people overlooked it like we did.
I would think they would have done, to be honest.
Yeah, it's just not a lauded match, is it? It's Brett's first title to win, but it was dumped on Coliseum video for many.
It's not just that. I mean, I'm struggling to think, is it on anything else? Is it on one of the Brett collections? I don't think it is.
On his DVD, and if you remember, the match is hand-picked by him. He does not put it on there, which I think is telling.
Yeah, exactly. You would think he would want his first title victory on there, but obviously
especially going clean over Ric Flair on it.
Yeah, obviously his Flair feelings are clouding his judgment there.
Bear my indulgences for just a second. I'm doing a Scott Criscolo circa 2011 here, and I'm reaching for the DVDs on the shelf. Because I think there is another match on the Brett Dungeon collection.
Yes.
Well, that's fucking rubbish. Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah, Brett versus Flair for the IC title. New Haven, Connecticut. Hi again, Scott. November 91.
Just after Flair debuted.
I am going to have to re-watch this set, and I will probably do so tonight, you know. Because I bought this one a few years ago. I've only watched it once compared to the Best There Is one, which I've seen multiple times.
But I think that's why it'll be very low down if it's even on there, because people just don't remember it. It's just not been readily available until the last couple of years.
Please.
And even then, And even then, you have to search for it.
Yep. But luckily, it's a bit easier to do these days. Well, and again, like I said at the top of the show, as easy as navigating the network can be. Yeah. If this is one you've slept on, it's one you've forgotten about, or if you knew or found one you've never ever seen before, then you're never going to have an easier or better chance than you do now until the network gets taken down. I'm just putting it out there in case it does happen. You never know. But yeah, one for the ages, I'm sure we'll agree here.
Absolutely.
And a great moment. And I do wish we had that Brett promo at the end. It's on his DVD, which I talked about in our special relations show a few editions ago. Wonderful stuff. Just such a throwback. A time where I was just well too young to take in at the time, but I really wish I'd lived through this style of wrestling. It's one that always does it for me above all else, and any chance I get to relive it, especially when it's these two, I'm going to take it with both hands. Bret Hart WWF champion. Even now, those words call me biased, but they still sound pretty damn good.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
It bloody is. So you'd think that would be where we wrap up the video, but we've still got a fair bit to go yet. Gorilla and Brett do, though, wrap up that segment. He says that Monsoon dubbed him the excellence of execution. Yes, but he tried that with everybody else as well, from Bob Orton down or up. He looks forward to taking on all comers. He promises us one thing. He will always be the people's champion. Not sure you're going to allow that one to stick in 2020, Brett, but okay, you did try.
If you started raising an eyebrow, you'd have to...
I was waiting for it. Instead, we got the ever-present Bret Hart smirk.
Yeah, I just want to quickly say, though, I really did like those interviews between Gorilla and Brett. Really, really informative, which you don't usually get for these things.
Oh, I didn't know we were going to get that, so very welcome surprise.
Yes.
You can tell as well that Gorilla is legitimately a Bret Hart fan.
Absolutely.
You can tell watching those segments that, yes, he called everybody else the excellence of execution too before settling for Bret, but you knew he meant it. And it's very nice. It's genuinely nice, and indeed, that word again, deserved to see. Sadly, we go back to the house, and the Bushwhackers are finished, but not in the way I would have hoped. They're finished with the electric. And now it is time for the plumbing, a Bushwhacker bathroom. So how's that going to end? I'll give you a few seconds to jot down a few notes and what your thoughts might be. If you chose Alfred Hayes gets covered in water as your number one, give yourself a pat on the back. Or maybe not, because of course that was going to happen. We'll talk about that one after our final match, which is one we mentioned back at the top of the show, and from Beaumont, Texas, between Razor Ramon and The Undertaker. Quite the partnership here. We'll talk about the match and we'll talk about what could have been with these two. So this is the match as we get it. Seeing Taker so into the zombie character really is something. A main event anywhere in the entire world, say a FR commentary team. Could have been. Razor bails early, but Taker is going to follow him. All the way back inside, though, so Razor gets the early advances. The punches do nothing and the head to the buckle does even less. Choke in the corner and Razor sells that with rolling eyes. He doesn't do the spooky fingers, though, at least. Old school, I always call it that now, takes Razor down as Bearer gives us an, oh, yes. Yeah, that wasn't bad. Kick by Razor has no effect, I'll say so myself. Kick by Razor has no effect, so he just slaps Razor down. He can clothesline Taker, though, but he lands right on his feet. Same again after a punch off the apron. Next, Snap sends Ramon all the way across the ring to sell it. Short arm clothesline and a beauty. He misses a charge though, so the bad guy gets on a fast bulldog, but he gets up before Razor does Undertaker. He does though show some signs of wear, and a chair shot on the outside does put Taker down briefly, and a whip to the steps follows. Slam by Razor, but you know the drill. Same off a side slam too. Six standing elbows by Razor, but thanks to Bearer hopping up on the apron, he gets up from them. Razor is able to grab the urn, though, and it goes right between the eyes, but all we get is a two count and a sit-up. Razor takes a choke slam, but that is all he fancies here, so he takes a hike and the cheap count-out loss. Didn't get a whole lot here, Ben. It was only about 8 to 9 minutes worth, but it left me wanting more, and
yep.
I'm disappointed that we didn't really get it elsewhere.
Yeah, so I... I think, again, this is a pretty basic match, but these two doing a basic match is, you know, far better than Crush and the Berserker doing a better basic match.
Really?
So, I know, hot take. but yeah, you definitely wanted more after this. I'm glad we mentioned the six elbows, because I also got the six elbows down. That was particularly good going. I need to hear that Paul Bearer impression though again, please.
Oh yes. Thing is, when I first tried it then during the play-by-play, my voice cracked, so I didn't think I'd be able to get anywhere with it. I surprised myself.
I think we should also mention, just not even about this match, that Callum didn't even know what Paul Bearer meant until about 2 years ago.
Yes, go back to one, I think a special relations episode 4.
Something like that.
It's one of the 100 lists, and you'll find it in there somewhere, provided you don't fall asleep at any point during it.
Those 10 hours.
10 hours.
But no, it was a good basic match. You know, they weren't, again, the point we were making early on, they weren't going out there, you know, busting any balls. You know, they were working within themselves, and like I say, I don't mind that. I have no problem with that. You've always got to make the people want more, don't you?
You have, and that probably explains the finish here as well, coupled with the fact they clearly had plans for Ramon at this point. I wouldn't want to see him eating Pitbull here.
At this point, so I don't know when this was recorded, but this would have been like late 92, early 93. Yeah. You couldn't have jobbed either guy out at this point.
Oh, no. You ain't touched the taker. Razor's just come in. Big fanfare.
Yeah. I've also... That chokeslam was amazing. Why don't more people do that as a chokeslam instead of the whole, you know, drop him, you know, go down with him? It looks so much better.
It was a great chokeslam. Really, really good. Took it like a pro.
Yeah.
And considering he has a chokeslam in his own arsenal, I could see why he would want to go up for somebody else's. And how. Definitely the most memorable part of the match. Hey, basic but good and well worked is a nice way to put it.
Exactly.
Seeing Undertaker in his so into that character. Now, compare that to what we saw just a couple of days after we record this in the Boneyard match at WrestleMania 36. On his motorbike, calling AJ Styles by his real name. And here he actually is an undead zombie wandering around the ring. Goodness me.
Were you not a fan of the Boneyard?
I like the Boneyard match, yes.
Okay, I'm just saying, cool.
The Undertaker of 2020 is probably not the Undertaker of 1992.
Absolutely. But like you say, he was full on luck to the gimmick at this point, wasn't he? You know, all the way through to 94, really. Well, 96, if you want to be honest, it was sort of that Mankind feud was when he started humanizing a bit.
I could see why you'd want to miss out 1995 completely, because he was fed some rotters during that one, wasn't he?
Yeah,
I'm trying to block
the Undertaker versus the Million Dollar Corporation out of my mind, if I'm being honest.
Frickin' woeful. Well, on the topic of 95, if you've read one of the, I think it's Titan Sinking, the first book that came out a few years ago. Apparently, the plan was for WrestleMania 11 for Razor to turn heel and feud with The Undertaker to the point where they'd already shot some vignettes. I've not seen that story corroborated anywhere else, but I definitely want to believe it could have happened. I think Razor a heel turn at that point would have been pretty handy for him, because he was getting stale.
Yeah, and certainly where he was at that point, you know, he'd already dropped the Intercontinental title, hadn't he? So, you know, there was no need for him to be a face anymore.
After that, he pretty much span his wheels all the way until he was out the door.
Yeah, the drugs and alcohol took over, and then he was on his way.
I think we can call that one of the great wrestling what ifs.
Yeah, absolutely. He didn't even need to Scarface it either to be the heel. He could have just gone. He could have almost followed that Jake Roberts template, couldn't he? Of making the Undertaker trust him or whatever, and then he could have turned on him against the corporation even.
Mm. I want to think those vignettes are out there somewhere, locked in some vault in what used to be Titan Towers.
There's a hidden gem waiting to come out.
I'm there, front row and centre, if that ever drops on the hidden gems, if hidden gems ever comes back. But hidden gems are rather hidden now, of course. But that's a discussion for another day. Other network deep dives can look at that one.
I was about to say, other podcasts on hidden gems are available.
You don't have to look too far for those, unlike the hidden gems themselves. Yeah. Promising match here, I think we can call this one. Promising match.
Yeah, it was sort of a little look into what could have been.
Yeah. Probably not the last time I'll say that during some of the pairings on these Coliseum videos, but I enjoyed this one for what it could have been.
Mm. Exactly.
We can dream. No, we're nearly done now, and one chair has made it into the house. But because it took so long, the Whackers have set up a special treat for Alfred to be able to sit down in that chair and to watch all of his favourite Coliseum videos, the ones I will be watching over the course of this project. He rather likes this, so then they plug the telly in, and as the show ends, it blows up. Oh, no!
What were the chances?
Who would have thought it? It was all going so well.
He's not had a good day of it, has he, Alfred?
Poor old Alfred. Not fair.
I want to know where the video player was, though. We never saw that.
No, the telly plugged in. Anything else? No. maybe they were ahead of the curve and they'd had all the videos loaded onto the TV.
Well, you never know.
Streaming, you know, way back in 1993. Say they're behind the curve, you know.
No, Alfred had a very bad day of it. You know, let's hope he sorted himself out.
He seemed to be enjoying himself, Alfred. What did you think of those skits? We might be talking about them again in a second, but what did you think? Harmless fun, you call them that?
Yeah, like I said at the very beginning, these are sort of the Bushwhackers and Alfred Hayes. They don't have the best reputation, do they? But I didn't mind them. Whether it was just because I liked the tape as a whole and I was willing to put up with it. So, you know, if you know what you're getting. At the end, like it's like the treat at the end. But yeah, harmless fun's a very good way of describing it.
Oh, I'm here.
Sorry, I thought I'd gone then.
you were here. Did you finish up with all that? Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't going to add anything else.
Okay, no, so I think that brings us to our show awards. The awards, as somebody else would put it, much better than me. So I think I know the answer to this one, but for formality's sake, Ben, what is your rewind of Smack and Whack'em, i.e. the best match or moment?
That would be the Brett crowning glory, Brett versus Flair.
Couldn't agree more. What's your fast forward, the worst match or moment?
Oh, crush Berserker.
Yes, at least we've got, I can't believe I'm comparing the two from a match-by-match perspective, but it was probably slightly better than Repo versus Earthquake, but, you know, Repo, yeah. Come on.
It wasn't the best opening to the tape, but it got better.
what is your pause moment? Are the best, worst, or most notable visual?
I would say I've got two. So either Brett fixing his hand or fixing his finger, and Yoko's devouring of the food. I was quite, like I say, I was quite hungry after the fact, but
the extreme close-ups on Yokozuna's lips.
Yes,
I very nearly went for Al being electrocuted. Actually, the hopeless mark I am, I went for Brett punching the air after he'd won the title, because as I said in the play, that's what you call a real reaction, everybody. So,
absolutely.
To sum up then, Smack 'em Whack 'em, is it a buy, i.e. a must-have, must-see? Is it a rent, a might-have, must-see? A bargain bin, don't want to spend more than a couple of quid on it? Or is it a wipe, i.e. an avoid? I don't think it's going to be that.
It's a buy. It's a definite buy. You've just got to think, it's a two-hour tape. An hour of it is Brett versus Flair and Brett versus Shawn. And if you get and you've got the Yokozuna single, you know, Yokozuna cooking for the single man on there.
Easy buy for me. Easy buy. Must see. It's a quick watch of 2 hours. Yes, you've got some trash at the start, but those matches are out of the way pretty soon. The Bushwhacker stuff is childishly inoffensive. It's only 2 or 3 minutes each go. You get a 40-50 minute Bret Hart showcase towards the end of it, and need I say more, read that one. And a fascinating insight into what could have been with Razor versus Undertaker. This is an easy buy, a two huge thumbs up. I think this one's going to be in the running for the best tape I watch for quite a while. I don't know what's coming next. This one's going to take some knocking off its perch, I think.
Yeah, there was a very specific reason why I picked it.
There was. Peaking early and all that. Which brings us to the end of our review of Smack and Whack. And Ben, thank you very much for picking that one and joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure all mine and all the listeners. Ben, where else can people find you? What other PTBM projects have you got milling around, and what's happening?
Oh, God. I have actually got quite a bit going on, haven't I, at the moment? Okay, so you can reach me individually on Twitter at BenL1981. You can reach me as part of the special relations at PTBNSpecialRel1. So as our special relations podcasts are going, we did an episode with Jennifer Smith. That's downloaded right now. You can hear that. I think, Rory, have we got the live episode coming up?
Live one will be around. Yep, look out for that one.
Yeah.
Chatting with the Chaps is the other name for that one.
Chatting with the Chaps is up. I've got a website. Unpopular Opinions is still there. I did an article based on, you know, being stuck at home and working and all that, called the Corona Diaries. That got a lot of positive feedback, which I'm very happy about. I've also done a few podcasts, a couple of Laughing Theatres and a Freak Out Drive-In with Jenny, which might be out by the time you've heard this. I'm not sure. I know one of them, the She's Out of My League Laughing Theatres out. Whether the one others are out, I'm not sure. But yes, there's plenty of me around if you want to hear me.
All Ben, all the time, everybody.
I'm kind of taking over.
Not a hostile takeover, though.
No. We're not going full NWO style.
At least not yet.
Yeah.
But ubiquitous Ben Locke, I think, is a nice way to put it. I am Rory McNamara. You can, of course, hear me on the Special Relations podcast when they drop every month, or more often a month, actually, on the PTBN Wrestling feed. They do look out for the live one called Chatting with the Chaps, in which Ben and I, with Mr. Callum, broke down the famous Raw from MSG, September the 22nd, 1997. One or two fairly notable things occurred on that one, Ben.
It did. And here's another hot take. It still holds up, everybody.
Really, really does. So if you missed the live broadcast of that one a couple of weeks ago as we record this, do check it out. So it's called Chatting with the Chaps, where we go through that one. But our regular show, Special Relations, dropping each and every month here on the PVN Wrestling feed.
And Sorry, Rory. We're also joined by a couple of special guests on that, aren't we?
Absolutely right. If you want to join us on there, then do let Ben or myself or Callum know via the PTBN at PTBN Special Rel 1 is the Twitter handle, or look us up on Facebook, anywhere like that. We're more than happy to have you on to shoot the breeze, if people still say that, about all things modern wrestling and a few more things as well. You can also hear me on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. I have sidled back on that in recent months because I've got other things going on, much like this, but I still come up in there from time to time, so do hear that anywhere you get your podcasts. This has been episode 2 of Senior Video. Any particular Coliseum video you would like me to check out in the near future, do get in touch at PTBN Special Rel 1. Drop me a line. Draw my attention to it. Just say, Rory, I'd like you to watch this one, such and such, and we will get to that as soon as we can. Or if you want to be a guest on the show, let me know as well. I'm sure we can arrange that all too easily. But Mr. Ben Locke, thank you once more for joining me today.
Thank you for having me yet again. It's been a fantastic show. Thank you.
Everybody, I'll see you again next time. But for now, smack 'em, whack 'em, I have Seen Your Video, and we'll catch you later.